Hello, it's Vidas Pinkevičius, and welcome to the home study course of Liebster Jesu Wir sind hier, BWV number 731. In this home study course, I will teach you how to practice, play, analyze, perform, and master, and even memorize this beautiful chorale prelude by Johann Sebastian Bach. So before we start actual practice, I always emphasize analysis of the piece, because you know it's a very powerful technique. Is if we take a piece of music and we analyze the structure of it, analyze the cadences, tonalities used, the compositional techniques, anything that comes to mind, anything that we see on the page, so that at first perhaps we can see many different notes, a bunch of notes written in, but after the analysis there comes this deeper understanding of this piece, and we will be able to appreciate the structure much better and to reveal this structure to our listeners as well. So it's really, really crucial and vital, I would say vital, that the first step before even practicing this piece is, of course, to take a look at the structure of it and see how this piece is put together. Okay, so I hope you will be following the score that is provided with this home study course. The score is with complete fingering and pedaling for you written in. I've done the work writing in the most efficient and stylistically correct fingering and pedaling, which creates the ideal articulation even without thinking. That's very, very significant help if you can do that, if you can have this such a score and apply the score and practice while looking at this fingering and pedaling. Basically you won't have to think about the articulation almost at all. There will be the places where of course we need to articulate more consciously, but in general this efficient fingering and pedaling will be designed so that it naturally creates the ideal articulation for this kind of music. So let's take a look at the structure of this piece, and now you can follow the score. And the structure is basically such that this chorale prelude is composed of four lines of music. Four lines of music, basically measures 1 and 2 are the first line of the chorale tune, measures 3, 4, and 5 is the second, 6 and 7 the third line of the chorale tune, and then the remaining measures are the fourth line. So normally we should also take a look at the tonalities and keys used in this, of course, piece. So basically the key you can see is G major, and the way we can see that, we can understand that it's G major, is because there is one sharp next to the treble and the bass clefs, F sharp, right? So, and the starting bass note, the bass note in the bass, the first starting note is G, and the last note in the bass is also G. That's one of the main characteristics of the key, that it ends and starts on the first scale degree and on the tonic chord. We will talk about the chords a little bit later, but But it's a G major chord and key, G major key, which has just one accidental. Yes, so this was G, B, and D. This chord is a tonic chord of this home key G major, and the entire chorale prelude is based on this key. Okay, not everywhere you can see this key or throughout. You see, if this piece was constructed just using the F sharp and purely totally in G major, that would have been a little bit boring. The more variety in keys you have generally, the more tonalities you modulate to throughout the keys, and the more colorful chords you use, generally the more interesting the piece is in general. So Bach, of course, knows this rule, and whenever we see a different accidental, like in the bass part, second measure, we can see D sharp, right? So that's is not necessarily G major or G major, because G major doesn't have this kind of accidental, only F sharp. But sometimes if we see accidentals, different kind of accidentals, like this D sharp or C sharp, right, or F natural also is accidental, a foreign accidental to the key of G major, that does not necessarily mean that we are moving to the new key. Sometimes it's just chromaticism, just passing notes. Sometimes it's not necessarily a sign of the new key. So, but let's take a look at specific keys used. Okay, in measure one, you can see just purely G major key notes, the notes of G major. There is nothing very different here. All right, and in the second measure, let's take a look at the second measure. We can see in the alto part. Okay, let's be clear. Soprano line is the right hand part, and alto part and tenor part is given for the left hand, and the bass part is given for the pedals. Okay, so the left hand plays most of the time two voices. But so in the second measure, you can see this C sharp, and C sharp is of course not the sign of G major, but it's if you know the circle of fifths, basically circle of fifth is a system of keys which are located in the ascending or descending number of accidentals, and this C sharp is the second accidental in the system. So F sharp is the first and C sharp is the second. So basically this is the sign of the key which has two accidentals, and this is basically D major key, the sign of D major. Okay, then the next the same measure in with D sharp is of course either the key which has a D sharp in it, or just the chromaticism. I would say that it is just chromatic passing note going from D through D sharp in the bass and to E. It's just it's not a modulation, it's not a new key. Okay, nothing. Then what we see later on is of course F sharp, F natural in the third measure in the tenor line, F natural. So that's a sign of the key which has no accidentals. Of course it's C major, yes. And then later on this F sharp appears in this, at the end of this measure, also in the tenor part, okay? Then measure 4 doesn't have any new accidentals, and measure 5 has F natural in the alto. Again, F natural indicates the key of C major in this case, the key with no accidentals. All right, but just touching these keys, it's not a complete modulation, but it's called tonicization, where we just touch, barely visit the keys. And tonicization is different from modulation in terms that that modulation requires a full cadence, a cadence is the place where musical idea comes to a close. So if you want to have a modulation, you have to have a cadence. You have to finish musical idea in this new key. But in measure 5, there is just barely one F natural and very short tonicization, just a visit to the new key, to C major. Okay, so that was the end of verse of line 2. Okay, and then measure 6 has a few more accidentals. Generally, if you see in the pedals and in the tenor, C sharp and D sharp. Okay, that's interesting. Generally, if we see these two kinds of accidentals next to each other, C sharp and D sharp, that means that they are 6th and 7th scale degrees raised in the minor key. Okay, 6 is C sharp and D sharp is 7th, raised 7th scale degree. Okay, let's take a look. I'm playing the bass line of measure 6. C sharp, D sharp. Okay, this D sharp is the seventh scale degree raised 7th scale degree, which means that the first scale degree is E. So this is basically the key of E minor, which normally doesn't have a lot of accidental, just one accidental, F sharp, the same number of accidentals as G major has. But since there are raised 6 and 7 scale degrees, C sharp and D sharp, then it means basically that it is not a natural minor. Not this kind of E minor scale, but melodic minor with 6 and 7 scale degrees raised, like that. Like that, with C sharp and D sharp. So that's also in the next measure 7th, D sharp is okay. All right, and basically we have until the end of this 7th measure the key of E minor. Okay, then the next line 4 or measure 8 also has the same accidentals, C sharp and D sharp in the tenor part, in the alto part, and soprano also has D sharp. Okay, so that also means that it's the key of E minor here. But since the entire chorale prelude is so short, and we are approaching the end of it right here, towards the end of measure 8 and 9, we can guess that we need to return to the key of G major someplace, right? in order to finish in the home key. So that what that's exactly what Bach did. At the end of measure 8 in soprano line, you have the last beat of it, right? G, C natural, D natural, which means that there is no longer a key of E minor, but a return basically to the home key of G major. And this is throughout the rest of the chorale prelude, and that's the basic tonalities used in this key, okay, in this chorale prelude. So we have taken a look at the harmonic structure, at the tonal plan of this. Now let's take a look at the cadences. Cadences, as I mentioned earlier, is this the end of musical idea of musical idea, which comes to a close. This exact a few basically chords which help to finish the musical idea. So if I play this chorale prelude and see that I see a long note, for example, in the second measure, the end of the first line, right? So that basically indicates that we need to take a breath, right, after the long note, if we would sing this chorale prelude. So one of the main signs for the cadences is, of course, the long note. Okay, so the long notes indicates that there are four general cadences in this piece, because there are four lines. So let's take a look at the first cadence number one is in the key of D major, okay, D major, because we see this sign of C sharp in the tenor in the second measure. So this is a cadence in D major. Some people would believe that it is still the key of G major, but it's not a tonic chord, not a first degree tonic chord, but a fifth scale degree chord, which is called the dominant chord. Dominant chord built on the fifth scale degree, basically it is a D major chord. So it's possible to analyze this like that too. Then the next line finishes with the cadence, of course, in the home key on the G major chord, mm-hmm. because it is measure 5. Okay, then the entire structure is repeated. I'll talk about this repetition and the form of this piece just in a second, and then the next third line finishes on the dominant chord of E minor, dominant chord, meaning the cadence is not a final cadence. The final cadence would be on the tonic chord, but it is called a half cadence because it's not a tonic chord. And generally, half cadence is on the dominant chord. Okay, so this the last beat of measure 7 is B major chord, B note in the bass. Upper notes are also B, D sharp, and F sharp. And since B, note B is the 1/5 or 5 scale degrees higher than E, this is 5/5 scale degree of E minor or the dominant chord. Okay, the dominant chord must always be a major chord, regardless of the home key. If the home key is major, dominant is major. If the home key is minor, the dominant chord is major, still major, okay, most of the time. Okay, so this is the third cadence in E minor, half cadence, and the last cadence, of course, is the final cadence in the last measure in the home key of G major. Okay, we have taken a look at the general key tonal plan, keys used, cadences. Now let's take a look at the form. The form, as I told you before, is interesting because it has four lines. We could call the first half of this piece letter A. Okay, thematic material would be called with A, and then something different comes after that. This is B, okay, A and B. So that would be like a binary form. But since you see a repeat sign at the end of measure 5, we have to take this into consideration and put this another A. A and B would be the general thematic structure. A, B. And if you see A, B with repeated A in the beginning, this is called the bar form, bar, B-A-R form, the bar form. And the bar form is the traditional form for the German Lutheran chorales. Most of them are in this bar form, okay, with A section A repeated, and then comes B section later on. One thing about section A, it's just the music is the same, but the words, of course, if you would take this chorale prelude and sing it, okay, with different text, it would be, of course, with different text. Therefore, it's not AB, but AAB, okay? And this, the first half, A and A, is called in German Stollen, and the B part is called Abgesang. Okay, these are the terms, and now we know the general form of this piece, not only the keys, not only the cadences. Okay, the next step, of course, would be to start practicing. But before practicing, we would need always to write in fingering and pedaling, which you don't have to do this because I have taken care of this. So just take a look at this score now, follow the score, and now we will be ready to take a real practice, to take this piece under our fingers and feet and start learning this piece. Since this is not a very long piece, I suggest you divide this piece into four fragments. One fragment is like one line of the chorale tune. Okay, so fragment 1 would be measures 1 and 2. Fragment 2 would be measures 3, 4, and 5. And fragment 3 would be 6 and 7. And fragment 4 would be 8, 9, 10. The last, the remaining measures, okay? So four fragments to learn. So we will not learn this piece in its entirety right away, but we will divide our practice into four manageable fragments or units. And the first fragment for the, if you are, for example, learning this piece in 4 days, for example, then it would be just a great thing to do. Learn fragment 1 on day 1, learn fragment 2 on day 2, fragment 3 on day 3, and fragment 4 on day 4. And I'll teach you how to do this in exact steps right away. Okay, so the first thing you need to do with fragment 1 is this. you have to play in a very, very slow tempo the soprano line only, okay? Because it's not a very advanced piece, no, not. But if you struggle with hand and feet coordination and with ornaments which are very, very often used in this piece, sometimes written in, sometimes not. I'll teach you how to perform those ornaments exactly in just a second. And you need to, for the best results, always separate the parts and start practicing just one line at a time. And the first line is, of course, the soprano part. The soprano part. All right, so as I mentioned, this is a slow piece, slow moving piece, but we will still need to practice even slower than in a concert tempo. How slow? Okay, the first thing you need to know is, of course, the meter. Meter is 4/4, or the common meter. You see this C sign next to the sharp. It means that there are four beats in this measure. Four beats means four quarter notes. So four units, four quarter notes in each measure. And so you need to take this tempo that it should be slow enough for you to be able to be in control of each and every note. Okay? And not only note, but in rhythms and articulation and everything. And I'll play this piece for you in just a second, just to demonstrate how it would sound for you, okay? And then we will practice just one line at a time, okay? This is how this piece should sound. Sound when you are ready to perform this piece in public, this chorale prelude. Now, as I promised, let's take a look at the first fragment, and the first fragment is the first two measures and just the soprano line. Okay, when you play the soprano line, try to keep the constant pulse and try to count out loud the beats. Okay. The beats 1, 2, 3, 4. But not only that, but also you have to subdivide the beats. Because if you play the notes correctly, that's very good, but if you are struggling with the rhythms, difficult rhythms, you can see right away in the first beat you have this dotted eighth note and 2/32, for example. In this next beat there are 3/16 notes and 2/32, and then in the fourth is nothing special, but it is a tight over note to the next beat, and then in the next beat is another 16th note and 4/32. So this is all quite complicated for the beginning students, for students who are struggling with rhythms, hand and feet coordination and similar things. So in order to avoid rhythmical mistakes, I strongly recommend you take this slow tempo and you count out loud the beats and subdivide the beats. Not only say 1, 2, 3, 4, but also 1 and 2 and 3 and. This means that you would be counting in 8 notes, not in quarter notes. But this is very, very good if you can do this subdivision. Okay, let's take a look at the soprano line first. On the downbeat of the next fragment, always. This is very important, that whenever you practice one specific fragment, you always start on the downbeat and you always end on the downbeat, okay? Because the downbeat is the beginning of the next fragment, then the next fragment will be connected. When you start practicing this fragment two, then you already know how to start it, how to connect number one with number two, and this will be very easy. If you, on the other hand, if you just finished on this last note of this measure, second measure, you don't know what's coming next, and this connection is not there. So always start and end on the downbeat, okay? So the first thing you notice is, of course, the ornaments. Three ornaments in the soprano line. These are called the mordents. Mordent is a short version of this trill, of longer trill. But since this mordent is with a vertical line, you can see this vertical line, okay? Then is of course a different kind of mordent. I'll teach you both kinds in measure. For example, 7 in tenor part, you can see this different kind of just regular mordent. But in measure 1 and 2, this is of course with a vertical crossed line. And the way we perform is, this is the starting note of the measure 1 with soprano line. Okay. 3 notes, B, A, B, that's it. The same is on the third beat, A, G, A. Again, on the second measure, 3 notes, B, A, and B. Alright? So that's about the ornaments, the mordents. Now, next thing we have to remember is, of course, the articulation. Notice that I don't play everything legato. Not like that. It's not stylistically correct. But we have to articulate each and every note. This is called articulate legato, or as contemporaries of Bach called the ordinary touch. The ordinary touch meaning that they rarely put any articulation indications in 17th and 18th century music, rarely, very rarely, especially in keyboard music. So this means that the performers, organists and keyboardists always knew how to perform this. They knew the correct way, they knew the traditional way. And the traditional way was, of course, this the ordinary touch, which is called in our days articulate legato. The way we achieve this articulate legato, I'll play without the ornaments now for you to be very clear. We make short spaces, gentle spaces between each and every note, but we are very, very careful for the music not to sound too choppy, not like that. This is not nice at all, of course. So we need to have this singing manner. The Bach calls it the cantabile manner. Cantabile in Italian means singing manner, like singing. So singable manner, singing. It should be a vocal quality. This is not like that. Very connected, almost legato, but not quite. Okay, so this is the very, very important rule to follow throughout the piece as you are practicing it. And in soprano line, because it's a solo line, very ornamented and very melodically developed, it's not too difficult to notice. But when you move to the middle voices, especially in the left hand, when you have two parts, this is when it gets really complicated. If you don't have this well-developed finger technique, but with my method, with my fingering, I'll make it much easier, because the natural fingering will create the natural articulation for you, the ideal articulation for you, easily. Okay, and the same is with pedaling, but we'll talk about it on the with the bass part. Okay. So since you know this soprano line, now it's the time for you to master it. I suggest you play this line just 3 times in a row correctly. This means that if you are correct on the second repetition, and you make a mistake on the third repetition, you have to start counting from the beginning, okay? So basically minimum time required, minimum repetitions is 3 repetitions in a row, correct repetitions, correctly, without mistakes in melody, in notes, rhythm, articulation, fingering, pedaling, and the 6th is in hand and feet position. We're talking about the hand position now. Correct hand position is such that you don't lift fingers off the keyboard. We stay in contact with the keys at all times. That's very powerful. So practice it 3 times in a row correctly, okay? Then the next step would be to practice the alto line, okay? And I'll show you how to do this in just a second. We always start, okay, and start counting. 3 and 4 and 1 and 2. Okay, let's take a slower tempo. 1 and 2 and second fragment. Alright, so this is how this line should be performed. Again, aim for 3 correct repetitions in a row. And there are no difficult ornaments here at all, so this should be relatively easy. But articulation has to be very, very precise. Then the next step would be the tenor line, okay? Also aim for three correct repetitions in a row. And then the bass part. The bass part is in the pedals. Before we play with the feet, we need to prepare both feet in place. The first note and the second, both. This is called pedal preparation. This is a very powerful technique. Okay? So let's try to take a look at the bass part. One and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and one. Okay, until here. And notice that I also don't play it legato. But because of my pedaling, toes only pedaling, you notice there is not a single heel used in this pedal line, just the toes. It's very, very stylistically appropriate just to play with toes, because the Baroque organs in the Bach time made it very, very difficult to play with the heels, right? So the normal way to write in pedaling would be just to use the toes, okay? So play this line also three times in a row correctly, always counting out loud the beats and subdividing them. But the last thing to remember about the bass line is also to keep the correct feet position also. We talked about the hand position, that we don't lift the fingers, right, of the keys. That's important. With the pedals, we also use the same. We sit on the middle of the bench, and we depress the keys in such a way that we keep our feet sort of in one unit. We keep the heels together, or all, if possible, the heels are shaped in the V form, diagonally. And if we have this wide interval like that in the beginning, G and G, then of course it's not possible to keep the heels together. But just to shape the heels. The feet in the V form, like diagonally, and that would be fine. The way it works is that we depress the keys, the pedals, with the inside of the toes, the inside portion, the big toe basically, not the outside, but the inside. If we do that with the inside, then our knees will be pointed inward. And on the contrary, if we do this with the outside of the foot, then the knees are pointed outward, which is not correct. The inward position is much better, because you will be much, much more precise when playing pedal lines in general. It's just a general comment for any organ piece. Okay, so keep this correct feet position also in mind when practicing three times in a row correctly fragment number one in the pedals. Okay, when you master each individual line, it's time to move to the second step. Second step would be to play two voices at a time, two voices. Okay, and combinations of two voices are, the first one is soprano and alto. Okay, let's take a look. Basically how it should sound, but take even a slower tempo like that. One and two and three, like that. It would be easier for you to do two voices at a time, soprano and alto, also three times in a row correctly. Then the next step would be soprano and tenor. Soprano and tenor, right hand and left hand. Until here. So that's soprano and tenor, also three times in a row correctly. And then comes the bass and soprano. Soprano and the bass. Combination. Now let's take a look at the left hand part, alto and tenor. Okay, this is much more difficult than soprano and alto or soprano and tenor, because now you have to play two voices in one hand with correct articulation. Okay, let's try, take a look. Also, be very careful not to lift the fingers of the keys of the keyboard. Stay in contact. Always be touching the keys, even with the fingers that are not currently playing. Just make them rest on the keys and don't lift them. Now, the next step would be to play the alto line and the pedal part. Also important that you play the rhythms correctly and the articulation correctly, not only the notes, and the fingering and pedaling should be the correct also three times in a row. Now the tenor and the bass. Of three voices would be, for example, three upper parts: soprano, alto and tenor without the pedals. this kind of combination is you have to be very, very careful to play the ornaments correctly. Even the first one. The ornaments is the ornament, the mordent is performed on the beat. Don't start, but together with the chord. That's very, very important. That's stylistically correct way. Okay, also three times in a row correctly. Now, let's take a look with combination with three voices, but without the tenor. So, soprano, alto, and bass. Complicated because you're using the feet also, right, left, and pedals. It's sort of a trio texture, and trio texture is for three different parts, two different hands and the pedal, and it's generally very, very difficult. So unless you really master all the previous steps, try to resist the temptation to go to the next step. This is very important. If you want the fastest possible progress, resist this temptation to go to the next step unless you master the previous step. So this will be the most efficient way to practice, and you will be able to master this piece very, very quickly. All right? Then the next thing is without the alto part, the next combination, soprano, tenor, and bass. Combination of three voices without the soprano, alto, tenor, and bass. Let's take a look. Just the left hand and pedals, basically. It's not very easy. I'll tell you why in a second. Difficult with this combination is that if you are not used to playing the pedals and left hand separately, then you are normally feeling a little bit difficult here, because left hand tends to play the bass line in the piano playing, always the bass line. But with the organ playing, the left hand part is the middle step, okay, and the pedals generally take the bottom line. So it's just something you have to get used to it. After sometimes it's not that difficult as it might seem at the moment. Okay. Also, do this combination three times in a row correctly. Now, the last, of course, step for this fragment would be to play all parts together. And we will be ready to the next fragment. Let's take a look at all four part texture: soprano, alto, tenor, and bass combined. Actually, the end of day one. If you have just only as much time as you did today. Just practice the first fragment for day one, okay, and leave something else for day two. All right, the next fragment in day two, for example, would be measures 3, 4, and 5. And we again start with the soprano part. Soprano part features also interesting ornaments, 3 mordents on the note G. Let's play the soprano line in rhythm. Until the beginning of the third fragment. Now the thing with these ornaments, with these mordents, is that you can actually play them a little differently with every note. For example, the first note, you start on the beat with 3 pitches, G, F sharp and G. Perhaps the same, but the third would be even longer. For example, not 3 but 5 notes, or you can do 3, 5, and even 7 notes like that. That's possible. And whenever you do that, try to play the first note of this more than longer. Try to keep this G, especially with a longer more than. Emphasize the G and take your time on the G and don't rush to the next note. Okay. Now the next measure 4 features a trill. The last beat of this fourth measure, the trill on the note A. And the correct way to perform it is starting on the beat from the top note, not from the main note, not from A, but from the B. So we start maybe like that, or even like that. It could be a free trill, but still start slower and accelerate and finish also slower. Alright, so that's the soprano line. Play it 3 times in a row correctly. That's one more difficulty with the soprano line I see in the second beat of measure 4. Second beat. We need here in this particular spot, we see very, very swift moving notes, not 16ths, not 32nds, but 64ths. And 64ths means that there are 4 64 notes in 1 16th note. Basically, that's how. So I recommend in this particular spot you switch counting not in 8 notes but in 16th notes. I will tap the 16th notes right here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's take it slower. 3, 4. 1, 2. Like that. 1, 2, 3. Okay. very, very fast notes could be performed legato because they are very, very fast. Or if you can articulate, it's even better, even better. But however you play them, make sure you articulate after the last note in this group, after this E, the 64th note B, E. These two notes, E and B, are not legato in this measure, in this fourth measure. All right, so the next step would be the alto line with the left hand. Note also on the beat like that, fast note, but could be articulated as well. Okay, make it sound at least three times in a row correctly. And then the tenor line. Sort of splitting in two parts. F sharp and G is added to the tenor. It's like a second tenor. So at that particular instant, there is not four parts altogether: soprano, alto, tenor, bass. But five: soprano, alto, tenor, bass. Okay. So when you play this measure five. These mordents also should be performed with the lower neighbor tone, the C, B, C, and then B, A, B. Three times in a row correctly. All right, then the pedal part features the moving eight notes. Important thing to remember about playing the pedal line in this particular spot is that you have to try not to cross the feet. For example, right, left, right, left. In these places, when you have right, left, right, left, you have to use this alternate toe technique, but avoid toe crossing. Avoid placing the right above the left or left behind the right, but instead move both feet together as a unit. Here you play E and D with different feet, but as you release both you release the E and D, they're both together, still in the same position. Then you move both feet together in the next position for C and B. Next position. Okay, same notes. Next position, A, G. Okay, this is called alternate toe. And what it does for your playing is that you will create this natural type of articulation, articulate legato, but also you will also be able to emphasize the meter much better and the alternation of strong and weak beats. Stronger beats will be beats 1 and 3 in this meter, and weaker beats will be 2 and 4. Okay, so if you mastered each solo voice separately, now it's time to go to the combinations of two voices, soprano and tenor, soprano and alto, excuse me, from measure 3. Three times in a row correctly, and then after that let's take a look at soprano and tenor part. Would be a little easier than the next combination, but let's take a look at it first. Last note with the pedals, this G, low G, with the left hand, left foot, your right foot has to already to be in place for the next G, for this higher note, because it's called the pedal preparation. You have to prepare your feet in advance for the next note. So as you release the last note with the right foot, this D, move from this D to this G in exact one swift motion, okay, to the G, and let it rest. Okay, this is called pedal preparation. It will be very powerful technique for you to use in general in your pedal playing, because what it does, it helps you automate your pedal technique. And you will not have to think about pedal notes at all. Your feet will be prepared in advance. That's a very, very significant achievement and help. All right, so now let's take a look at the alto and tenor. Two voices with one hand. actually three voices in one hand. That's the most difficult measure for the left hand. One and five. It should be not legato. All right. Now, alto and the pedals. For two voices. Take the next step, practicing three voices, then we'll practice soprano, alto and tenor without the pedals. Now it will be a little bit tricky because in measure three we'll see these mordents in the left hand and in the right hand part simultaneously. Let's take a look. Slower tempo if you need to play it correctly with correct articulation and ornaments and fingering and hand position. Then the next step would be to play soprano, alto and bass. So you have to go back and correct it and play three times in a row correctly. Let's take a look. Doesn't count, okay? So if you do this for your practice, if you're so strict with yourself, then your progress will be very, very fast. Okay, let's take a look at it again. This repetition was without mistakes. So what you need to do this practice three times in a row correctly. Okay, then soprano tenor bass would be the next step. Together. The entire first half of the chorale prelude, then you need to start from the beginning, like that. So just be aware that the repetition comes in after measure five. Okay, one thing I didn't mention earlier at the beginning of fragment two, when you practice this on day two, even before you practice the new material, it's very, very powerful if you just play three times in a row correctly fragment one from day one, okay, which you mastered the day before. Just three times in a row correctly. Perhaps all four voices together, perhaps very slowly. But if you make a mistake, then perhaps you can play in combinations of two voices, three voices, or even in solo parts if you need. You don't rush. The most important thing is that you don't take shortcuts in playing organ music. Don't think that there are shortcuts. There are efficient ways to do this, but you still need to complete each and every step. So before practicing the new material for day two, play a little bit three times in a row correctly fragment one, okay? So that would be the end of day two material, and we'll continue for the next day, fragment three.